increased by more than 30 years, and mortality for vaccine-prevented diseases has decreased by 99%. We've come a long way, but we still have to keep it up, and we've got a ways to go. And that's why you're here, and that's why I appreciate the work that you're doing, particularly at the local levels. I thought I'd share with you how I got involved in community. Many of my friends out here kind of know, so they've heard this story before, but when I was an intern, I attended the Medical Association of Georgia's annual meeting, and one of the intense issues that was being debated was that sexually transmitted diseases needed to be taught in medical school. Well, I stood up in a room with maybe 20, 25 people, and I told them I thought there was a need because I had never seen certain diseases, syphilis, gonorrhea, certain diseases, except in a textbook, and I thought there was a need. The reference committee passed a resolution, and they forwarded it to the AMA. The Georgia delegation also sent me to the AMA to speak to the same issue, and the resolution passed. And within 6 months, every medical school in this country was encouraged to include sexually transmitted diseases as part of their core curriculum. I learned that one person can make a difference, whether it's in medical policy or in medical practice. And I learned that I could make a difference in medical practice when the National Health Service Corps sent me to Biola-Battery. It's a pretty place, but it's a poor place. I found a community of working poor, too poor to afford medical care, but too rich to qualify for Medicaid. I liked the people, I liked the community, and I wanted to practice medicine there. But practicing medicine wasn't just sewing up to shark bites. I had to deal with the land sharks, the regulators, the reviewers, the red tape dispensers, and all of that paperwork that went along with it. So I decided to stay involved in the community. In every organization I could, everything from the Medical Society to the United Way to the Red Cross, Girl Scouts, Chamber of Commerce, I learned that my patients had problems that my prescription by itself was not enough, like adequate housing, especially after Katrina, employment opportunities, clear water, clean water, and those communities, organizations were there to help. I had a patient, Donna, who's at the time was about 26, 27 years old, had a little girl, and Donna had seizures. And her seizures had been under control until all of a sudden she came in the office and she started having seizures again. I said, Donna, what's different? Did you miss your medicine? Did you not take it? She says, well, no, I took it. And I talk, I have patients write down things for me so we don't forget when we're in the room, start talking. So she had drawn for me her pills. One pill was striped in two colors, and another one was solid. And I learned and understood at that moment that Donna couldn't read. 26 years old in today's world and could not read. We had to get a adult literacy program to the community. Another patient, Ms. Smith, and I always want to say her real name, but her HIPAA name is Ms. Smith. She's 39, 40 years old, about this high, African-American lady who's overweight. And she called me on a Saturday because, I always let patients call it, and they didn't abuse the privilege. They would call only if it was important. She called me on a Saturday and said, Dr. Benjamin, my back is really, really hurting. I went to that specialist that you sent me. He told me I have a slipped disc and I needed to lose weight, and I'm really trying, I am, but my back is really hurting. Can you call me in something stronger than ibuprofen? It's just not enough. I said, sure, I can call you in something stronger, but you got to come and see me on Monday or Tuesday. She said, sure, I'll come and see you. Sure enough, on Tuesday, I walk in the exam room, and there she is, leaning over the exam table in so much pain that she can't sit down. And I ask her, Ms. Smith, did the medicine help at all? She says, well, Dr. Benjamin, I didn't get it. I said, what do you mean you didn't get it? She said, I didn't have the money. I said, but you work for the school system. You have insurance. what do you mean you didn't get it? She says, I know, but I couldn't have, I didn't have the copay. But I get paid on Friday, I promise you I'll get it. And so I left out of the room and went in, had my nurse Nell go across the street to Jim, the pharmacist, and get her her medicine. And I went back in the room and I handed it to her and said, you know, you're in a lot of pain. Here's your medicine. You really need to start taking it. And at that moment, her eyes welled up with tears. And she says, oh, Dr. Benjamin, I'm so embarrassed. I didn't want you to have to do that. And I realized at that moment I had taken her dignity from her. That cultural competence has nothing to do with the color of your skin. It has to do with allowing people to keep their dignity. And so I figured out I had to try to figure a way to get out of that. And she had told me, you know, she got paid on Friday and she'd get her medicine. But so I told her the fact that there were people who would donate little small amounts of money, and we had a pot of money for medications just for situations just like this. And that if she wanted to pay it back on Friday when she got paid, she could, but she didn't have to. And so she was okay with that. And so as I was walking out of the room, she said, oh, by the way. And I said, yes. She says, can I get a work excuse? I said, sure, you can get a work excuse. Today is Tuesday. You want to go back to work on Thursday or Friday after you start taking your medicine? She says, oh, no. We have to strip those floors tonight. I've got to go back tonight. Here is a woman who can barely, well, can't sit down because she's in so much pain, but she's willing to go back to work to strip the wax off the floors so that our kids can go to school in a clean environment. It's people like her that I was willing to leave my practice of 23 years and come to Washington to advocate for her. And so I was so pleased that last fall that the Affordable Care Act made it possible for people to get preventive services. The insurance companies are now have to cover preventive services and that they cannot charge a copay. So again, I was, you know, it was mixed feelings that I came to Washington to leave my practice for 23 years, but now I have an office here in D.C. with 300 million Americans as my new patients. And I'm especially grateful to serve at this historic time as we make overdue changes in the way we finance our health care and how we deliver it, changes that will eventually give all Americans access to high-quality, affordable health care. But, you know, giving Americans health care coverage is the first step to truly preventing and reducing health disparities that plague our country. But we know that reducing and ultimately eliminating those health disparities require more. In addition to giving an Americans an insurance card, we have to address the social determinants of health, such as poverty. A study that was published in the December 2009 issue of the American Journal of Public Health showed that poverty and dropout rates or at least as important a health problem as smoking is in the United States. On average, poverty showed the greatest impact on health. Smoking was second, followed by being a high school dropout, non-Hispanic black, obese, a binge drinker, and uninsured. And you know that a year ago, President Obama signed that historic legislation that will give all Americans access to affordable care. The Affordable Care Act has common sense rules which ensure that you and your family's health and your family's coverage will be there when you need it. It removes the insurance barrier, company's barriers between you and your doctor, giving you the freedom to choose your doctor and to take charge of your own health. This means that people with chronic diseases and pre-existing illnesses will no longer be at the mercy of insurance companies. Women in particular cannot be refused coverage because of their gender, simply because they're women. A previous C-section cannot be a pre-existing illness. Neither can being a victim of domestic violence. This law gives 129 Americans the peace of mind that they will not be denied coverage because of those pre-existing illnesses, and that they will not be dropped from their insurance companies if they get sick. You know, prevention is the foundation of the public health system, and prevention is the foundation of my work as Surgeon General. So vaccines and that is the heart of prevention. But I was really excited about the benefits of the Affordable Care Act, particularly with the new insurance health plans required that preventive services be covered. Things like blood pressure checks, diabetes, and cholesterol tests. Many of the cancer screenings, including mammograms and colonoscopies. Counseling on topics such as quitting smoking, losing weight, recognizing and treating depression, and reducing alcohol use. And, of course, routine vaccinations, flu and pneumonia shots, and well child visits. But again, just as important is the fact that they can no longer charge you a copay or a deductible for those preventive services. Prevention is the basis of what our public health service is about. And so I was really excited about the fact that the Affordable Care Act provides this historic funding commitment to promote prevention and wellness. The new law established a National Prevention Health Promotion Public Health Council, which I have the honor to chair. This council is made up of 17 cabinet-level members, all sitting around the same table to provide coordination and leadership at the federal level to ensure that government is focused on prevention. 17 cabinet members, Secretary of HHS, Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, Secretary of USDA, the Federal Trade Commission, the Attorney General, 17 of these individuals all talking about prevention. We will develop the first ever national prevention strategy, and it's due out in a few weeks. With this council, I hope to move us from a system of sick care to a system based on wellness and prevention. Because just like you, I've seen so many missed opportunities for prevention in healthcare settings across the nation. If we truly want to reform our healthcare system in this country, we need to prevent people from getting sick in the first place. We need to stop the illness and stop the disease before it even starts. In addition to a state-of-the-art medicine that we have, we really need a new approach to promoting prevention in our communities, like housing and transportation, because we know staying healthy depends on those other factors that influence our health. The availability of quality, affordable food, our workplaces, and our environment. I want to change the way we think about health in this country, and that calls for a nation to be more holistic approach to the community health. Everything from safe highways and worksite programs to clean air and healthy foods. We want to get to a place where everyone understands that almost everything we do, even though it's not labeled health or prevention, really does affect the health and quality and length of life for all Americans. You know, this is an exciting time to be in healthcare. It's an opportunity for us to make our system work better and easier for the patients that we serve. And before I close, I couldn't be your doctor without saying, take time for yourself. Enjoy yourself, exercise, rest, vacation, play, and have fun, because it's important. You know, on the plane yesterday, the flight attendant said, put your own face mask on before attempting to help others. You have to take care of yourselves. You've got to be there if you're going to continue to help people. And, of course, it's flu season still, so take your flu shot. And so I'm going to end with a story that I like about a young girl who was jogging along the beach one morning. Early one morning, she was jogging, and there was an older guy who was tossing starfish in the water. And as she was running, he was continuing to toss these starfish in the water one at a time. And so when she finished her run, she couldn't take it anymore. So she just walked up to him, and she says, why are you bothering to toss those starfish in the water? There are hundreds and hundreds of starfish along the beach. soon as the sun rises, they're all going to, the sun's going to burn them off. They're going to die anyway, and it's not going to make a difference. Why do you bother? He looked at her, reached down, picked up a starfish and said, because it makes a difference to this starfish. And he tossed it in the water. Don't forget that the work that you're doing is affecting the lives of your own starfish every day. And so I hope that you'll continue to have a wonderful conference, learn a lot, get to have fun with your friends, and go back home.